You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. Your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
This is the Leaf Sky Podcast. Here's your host, Jim Taddy.
Thank you, Rossi. Mike Ross, PA announcer at Scotiabank Arena with that fine introduction, and welcome to episode 25 of Leaf Sky. Jim Taddy with you for the next 40 minutes or so. We've got two guests today. The regular Tuesday guest, Bill Waters, is here. He's the former Leafs assistant general manager. And Dave McCarthy from SiriusXM NHL Network Radio and also NHL.com. Before we get going, this reminder, basketball season won't be around forever, so get in on all the action now with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. DraftKings is giving new players a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Claim your free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes when using the code TBPN during sign-up. Playing daily fantasy basketball is simple. Just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, see how your team stacks up against the competition. Feel the sweat like never before. Every dunk, steal, assist means so much more with a DraftKings daily fantasy lineup. Baseball fans, you may have missed out on the season-long fantasy, so now is the time to get in on all the daily fantasy action where DraftKings has even more ways to make it rain. With DraftKings, payday comes every day for players, so what are you waiting for? Head to the app now. Here is the call to action. Download the DraftKings app now. Use the code TBPN during sign-up. This week, DraftKings is putting you in the action with a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. That's the code TBPN, and you can get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Okay, on to the hockey story. So fun with numbers here. We always go back to those three games in Edmonton, 4-0, 3-0, 6-1, Draisaitl, 1 point, McDavid, zip. And after that, the Leafs go into a swoon, 1-6, although there are some really close losses. Let's see, there are 3-4-3 losses and a 4-2 and a 3-1. So really, I mean, the 1-6 is kind of misleading. The 1 was an overtime win, so really it's 0-6 because the overtime would not be the same in the playoffs. So that's that run. How do they answer that? Well, they go 7-0-1. Now, of the 7-0-1, we can throw out the 1 because it's an overtime loss, and there are, let me do some quick looking here, there are 3 games, 2 overtimes and a shootout win, so really the record from 0-6, if you want to be really strict about it, becomes 4-0. If you go to the last 4 games, 3-1 in Winnipeg, 2-1 shootout, let's throw that out. So 3-1 in Winnipeg, 4-2 in Calgary Sunday, 5-3 in Calgary on Monday night. Those are impressive. This is a different Leafs team. The 3 in Edmonton tell you that they can dominate. If you let them dominate, they're going to shut you down and have their way with you. But if you get a little sloppy or you push back, like I would say Winnipeg did and Calgary did, the Leafs can play in the moment. They can respond. Monday night's game, classic. I mean, there's that power play. What the heck is that? That power play. Oh, my. So tentative, so slow, so ineffective. And so in the Monday night game, the Leafs are up 3-2 on a power play. Backlund scores, and all of a sudden it's tied at 3, shorthanded. Now, in the past, that would have been a death of any Leafs team. But this team, 45 seconds later, Matthews scores 4-3. Tavares scores less than 2 minutes after that. And all of a sudden, it's 5-3, and that's how the Leafs win. Now, this is, as I said, a different Leafs team. The Monday night game was not exactly their best in terms of executing properly. They frittered things away. They were up 2-0. It was tied at 2. They go up 3-2, and then it's 3-3. But the Leafs had battle there. And based on some pretty good goaltending from Jack Campbell, they were able to win. And this is something that you would carry forward into the playoffs. So things don't, in a playoff game, as you know, don't go by a script. There's a lot of things that happen in the spur of the moment. And the Leafs are able to respond. I like that. That is an impressive fact to say about this team. And they've developed that after going in that 1-6 or 0-6 run, however you want to categorize it, in 7-0-1 or 4-0. Either way, the numbers sort of tell you what happened and what did not happen there. First bit of analysis, Bill Waters, former Leafs assistant general manager.
Pretty good effort by the Leafs again last night, and clearly in the two Calgary games when they got backed into a corner, they could respond, and they did, didn't they?
Yeah, in both games, they played the way they had to play. They didn't want to give up early goals and change the tone of the whole game, because if you get down 3-0 on a Daryl Sutter team, you're pretty well finished, and the Leafs never let that happen. In the first game, Hutchison was solid in the first period and the rest of the game, for that matter. After they got a goal, he made some saves that were, you know, good chances. And last night it was the same with Jack the Cack. I mean, he was there when they needed him and played a solid game. The Leafs are probably scratching their heads as to what they're going to do with Freddie, but I would just leave him and let him get healthy and healed up and see if he comes back to his top five form, because that's going to be a significant observation as the playoffs go on. If you don't have that top-flight goaltending, it's going to be more difficult. And when one guy wins 9 straight, they've had pretty good goaltending.
Yeah, Jack Campbell with 9 straight, tying Felix Potvin from the start of the season, Jacques Plante, and the other guy's name, John Ross Roach from 1925, we all remember that.
Oh, yes. George Ainsworth, yeah. Some pretty good goalies.
Yeah, yeah, Hall of Famers. So let's get into the power play, because, I mean, everything's working well for the Leafs, but the power play. They finally got one last night, but that was right after they gave up a shorthanded goal. I mean, this thing is in slow motion. It's tentative, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't have any explanation for it. I mean, it's coincident with Wayne Simmonds coming back. And to me, he was an asset to that. So yeah. Maybe they have to adjust his positioning or something. I don't know. There's too much talent on it, not to score. And one player shouldn't deter from it. But if you look at the history of it, I think when Simmonds came back from his injury, that's when it all dried up like a prune. And before Simmonds' injury, that power play was clicking them in like Johnny B. Goode. Everyone was a winner. So it's interesting for a coach to sit and say, okay, what can I do now? I've made changes to a successful power play and I've screwed it up. Let's get back to the normal power play. And the one that was so strong and in the 30% range. So I would think that the coach will have to readjust on that particular part of his machinery.
Yeah, it's an odd look, because, I mean, literally everybody's having good runs, but when you put them on the power play, it's like they're just at a different speed. They don't know where they're supposed to be, or the puck doesn't move around fast, and it moves around in the periphery. There's just no chemistry there, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Well, it's almost like they're waiting to find Matthews open, and they circulate the puck in that fashion, and if he's not open, it goes around again.
Yeah.
That is not the way. You can't start favoring people, because every team that plays Toronto knows that if you can dry up Matthews, you've just taken 25 goals out of their arsenal. So you're going to do it. So you better start leaning on Tavares, leaning on Marner. You can't lean on him much more. He sets everything up, but Nylander is a guy that can start putting them in. They've got to find somebody other than Matthews that can drill them home.
And Matthews has been possessed lately. He looks really good. You can see sort of the wrist getting better by the game to the point where in the Monday night game, he was dominant. He won that game for the Leafs, in my opinion. How about you?
Yeah, he was. He said, I'll take this one on my shoulders because he has that capability. When he's playing, he's worth the price of admission. He's a very talented. He's getting more mature physically and mentally, and he's only going to get better. And it'll be interesting to see just how good he becomes.
So now we have a four-game sample size to go over. We've got two wins against Winnipeg, albeit one in the shootout, and two over Calgary. And I like these games because in some respects they do mirror playoff games. The Calgary, in that they were back-to-back nights, that's close quarters. And the Winnipeg series was good because Winnipeg is a good hockey team and the Leafs found their way to get through. And I think that's really how I would describe the Leafs now is they find a way, don't they?
Well, it appears that when they get time to prepare for a good team, they usually play them intelligently. And that's happened with Edmonton. That's happened with Winnipeg. And Montreal is coming up on Wednesday night. We'll see how intelligently they attack that. But the Leafs have a method in their madness. And yet you and I can't explain the six or seven games they went without winning. Yeah. What method was that? That's something they have to eliminate. They can't play like that. They're too good. And consequently, they got to get those losing streaks out of their system because when the playoffs come, only four of the games on your losing streak and you're out. See you later.
Yeah, so that gap, after the Edmonton sweep, they went 1-6. The one was an overtime win. And after the 1-6 run, they go 7-0-1. There are some extras wins there, like overtimes and shootouts. But to go from 1-6 to 7-0-1, that's remarkable. I mean, that there's your battle with adversity, isn't it?
Yeah, and no one came into the lineup that was going to make any difference except Galchenyuk. And he's played reasonably well, but he's not a difference maker. So you don't have any roster situations that enhanced your power play or made you a better team. It's the same group. And they've got to find a way to keep that group a consistent group, find a way that they're well aware of what they're faced with and how they're going to have to play them. Because they fall behind, and then it's a different hockey game. Once they've fallen behind, you're able to put the center ice lock on them, the right wing lock, the Peterborough freeze, you name it. It's don't let them come to within shooting distance of the goal.
Well, you're right. I mean, so you had Galchenyuk and Simmons comes back. But in the meantime, Matthews was injured and Freddie went out. And so did Campbell at one point. So it's not like they called in the reinforcements. They battled through not only game situations, but roster situations. And, you know, to come out of that and go 7-0-1, nothing short of phenomenal in my books.
Well, it tells you a lot about that team. I think we both know it has the potential to be a top four team in the National Hockey League. And it may realistically end up being just that. But the challenge for the Leafs is not to get out of the Scotiabank division. It's to win a round in one of the two playoffs, the conference final or the Stanley Cup. And that's a big order to put in without knowing what you're faced with and knowing how you have to play each opponent. You can't just go in there and play it as another game. You better be tactically alert. And if you're not, they'll eat you up.
So next week at this time, we'll be talking about what they did at the deadline. The deadline is Monday at 3 in the afternoon Eastern. And so when you look at the Leafs, they've got, as I speak right now, $186,000 in cap space, which, by the way, isn't too bad. There are 10 teams in this league with zero cap space. The Leafs sit at 13th. But, you know, having said that, with that limited cap space and what you said about, you know, what happens in the third and fourth round for the Leafs, if you are Kyle Dubas and you believe you can get there, how do you approach that deadline? Are you looking for somebody to help you later in the playoffs, or how would you go after this?
Well, I think if you're not going to go fishing in deep water, you better get another defenseman who can play in your top five. And, you know, that defense, the way it's played, with no big hullabaloo, deserves to be left intact. They've played very well, and there's no reason to change. So that's your insurance deal. If you get something in the meantime that's top four, you take it. I don't know why you would go after another forward based on what you'll have to give up. Palmieri is not one of my favorites. If you can get a guy like Foligno who brings an intangible to a team, I'd look at him if I didn't have to overpay. But it's a difficult proposition for Dubas, and his success in trading has not been his forte. He's done well with getting free agents, as he did last summer. But you look at the trades he makes, they sometimes don't turn out as well as he'd hoped. So I don't think you should be fiddling too much with it. I think this team, when prepared well and having their minds in the right orbit, they can play with anybody. And when you get to the playoffs, it's going to be tough no matter who it is. If you get Tampa Bay, if you end up getting Washington or Pittsburgh, but the Leafs can play with them or against them. They're just going to have to be sure that their goaltending will stand up to the pressure.
Yeah, and I think the I think the goaltending question is key, because to get out of your own division, you're going through some pretty good goalies, aren't you?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And I don't think they can take that chance, quite frankly, Jim. And there's been rumors about that they've been inquiring about goalies, some of whom are no better than the three they have, but they're still inquiring about it. And I'm not impressed. I think the whole idea is to get Freddie Anderson healthy, and if their doctors have told them that that's not a possibility, they better get looking.
Yeah,
and I don't know where you could find. I don't know where you could find a goalie that fits into the top five like a healthy Freddie Anderson does. So you may be looking for something you can't find.
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, like, you go back over the trade deadline goalie acquisitions, that doesn't work out too often, does it?
No, because, you know, your goalie is your key guy, no matter what your team is. And you just can't – if something happens to your goalie, you got to hope that you've got an insurance guy that can allow you to play. So there's no sense of giving either one of them away. Bringing a guy out of retirement is the only possibility for me.
I agree with what you said about the forwards. When I look at these forwards, and I think at some point they were talking about moving Kerfoot out, I wouldn't move him out. I wouldn't take away from what they had. I would try to add to it if you could, given the slim cap space.
Well, it's interesting to see what's available. Palmieri's all the talk. But, you know, by the time Calgary's going to try and stiff you with one of their guys, I wouldn't be interested in anybody on their team that might be on the available list, because after three, their talent diminishes and their determination goes with it. I don't know how Daryl Sutter is putting up with it. It's just not a very good team. And you play hard, you can beat them. If you play hard and you're talented, you'll beat them every night.
Well, you know, to your point about the Leafs and the power play, that's how Calgary looks at full strength. They look tentative, don't they?
Yes, they do. And you know what? That's a conundrum that the coach and his staff are going to have to resolve, because they created it. And when I say created it, quite accidentally, they changed it up to accommodate Wayne Simmonds, and I would have too. But how could they have made it any better? And in so doing, they've broken its rhythm.
So by the next time we talk, the Leafs will have crossed the trade deadline, as we mentioned. They would have played Montreal, Ottawa, and Montreal again. What do you think they do results-wise in the next three games?
Well, I would think that if they win all of them, then the point has been made. They're ready to go, and they're quite capable of going. Losing to Ottawa again exposes a sore that never heals. They're never ready to play a team that is obviously beneath them in talent. And that Ottawa team's got so much talent, it's just raw talent. But Montreal will be ready to play. They want to position themselves in the playoffs. So those two games really will be the indicator as to how badly the Leafs want to get first place. And if they get first place, who do they end up playing? Well, in the division, they'll end up playing probably Montreal.
Yeah,
it'll be Toronto, Winnipeg, Edmonton, or any order of that, and then Montreal. So I don't know. They've got to make some major decisions, but I don't think the decision that they're going to make is going to change their team or their results that much. They've got to work from within. How can we make our team play better right off the bat? Let's see what we got. When they played Edmonton, every game, bang, bang, bang. But you don't know what caused that. You can't replicate those conditions. But with that type of an offense, and you see the Tavares line starts playing well. Well, Calgary's barely got a line and a half, let alone three. So Tavares' line comes out as the third line. It makes it a lot easier to perform. And I think that's something that they won't have the benefit of come the playoffs, because at least each team in the playoff will have two solid lines, and hopefully they'll all have a third line that can check. So I don't know if they're going to find any advantage there, but I'm not anxious to see them trade. I just don't know what they'll do with what's left there. They're better off to try and address the problem. The power play is the problem, because if you're snapping those in on a regular basis, the whole game changes. And once the Leafs get their comfort zone, a 2-3 goal lead, they're usually pretty solid.
It's going to be interesting, Bill. Thanks very much. Chat next week.
And now, the second bit of analysis, Dave McCarthy from SiriusXM, NHL Network Radio, and NHL.com, in a conversation recorded outdoors. And there are more than one hints that that's the case. Okay, Dave, so we got a couple of sample sizes here. The big picture is, after going 1-6 after sweeping Edmonton, they then go 7-0-1. We could deal with that, or also the last four games. So basically they win in regulation, win in a shootout, and win back-to-back on consecutive nights in Calgary. So two against Winnipeg, two against Calgary, 4-0. Not bad at all. Not shabby. And I kind of like the way they're playing, because they're really earning everything on a game-by-game basis, aren't they?
They are. They're not playing freewheeling, riverboat gambling-style hockey, which, as we've become painfully aware of, does not have success in the postseason. What they're playing right now is really strong, sustainable postseason hockey, where you don't necessarily have your A-plus game every night. Sometimes you're at an A-minus, sometimes you're at a B. You know, I'd argue on Saturday, they were maybe closer to a B-minus, or Sunday, they were closer to a B-minus.
Right.
But they didn't roam around the ice. They weren't taking unnecessary chances. They just kept it under control. They went out every shift. Sometimes nothing happened, but that's okay. And then they were able to capitalize when their opportunities came up, or they took advantage of a break that went their way, like the goal on Sunday that went off the skate of Hanifin. I mean, sometimes you just need to stay in the fight and put yourself in a position to benefit from having a break go your way. If you're wheeling around the ice and you're giving up chances left, right, and center, and you're giving up three or four goals a game, and then you get one that goes in off a skate, well, that's nice. Now you're losing 4-1. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
that's what I've seen. And trust me, the cops are not after me. It's just
I was going to say, you're on fire there.
Oh,
that's,
baby.
You know? Set off the alarms. By the way, just so everybody knows, Dave is outside today, because it's a beautiful day when we're recording this, and obviously he's not in downtown Buffalo, but he's on fire.
Yes, but I really like what I've seen from this Leafs team, especially these last couple of games against Winnipeg and Calgary. You play this type of hockey in the playoffs, you've got a chance to win not just games, Jim, but series.
Yeah, well, that's actually where I was going to go to next, because they're doing what they have to do within the confines of a game. And so, you know, you have the high water mark of three consecutive wins in Edmonton, where it's dominant from the opening faceoff on, and the Oilers don't even get a sniff. And then you go into that trough, and you come out of the trough, and what you've added a layer to show that, I mean, these, I'm not going to say these mimic a playoff series, but there are some elements here that you would take into a playoff series, knowing that the team competes on a nightly basis and almost cleans the slate, not relying on what happened the night before. Certainly in the Monday night special against Calgary, game two of that series, they were, you know, they frittered away things a couple of times, and the old Leaf team would have folded up. But
yeah.
But it's, the one thing about this team, I think you would say, is part of their DNA is if they make a mistake, they atone for it in quick fashion. And they did that last night, didn't they?
Yeah, I agree. It's no longer a case where, you know, like you remember back a couple of years or so ago, they would either run you out of the building, or they just wouldn't have it. And my word, would it look ugly. Now, when they don't necessarily have their A game, which I don't think they really had in either game against Calgary, they just kind of plod along, and that's okay. I thought Calgary was not nearly as good on Monday as they were on Sunday. Man, that Calgary team, like was Johnny. Like, I feel savage saying this, but quite honestly, it's just the truth. Like, was Johnny Gaudreau playing on Monday? Was Sean Monahan playing? Like, I mean, if those are your best players, you're going to have a real tough time. But the Leafs didn't play down to that level. They were structured. Part of maybe why it didn't look like they were playing Monahan, Gaudreau, Calgary's top players, is because the Leafs were really sound structurally. And they didn't tax Jack Campbell all that much. He made some big saves, but generally he made the saves that he needed to make. And then when they did sustain a breakdown, like they did toward the end of the first period there on Monday, which, you know, was not a great look, they came out looking like a better team again in the second period, and just continued to plod along, and then they got their breaks and away they went. So that it's a really encouraging sign to see from this team. That Edmonton series was peak Leafs. Like, not only did they hold the opponent in check, but they also had their A-plus game. It was dominance all over the ice. The Calgary series, the last two games, you know, I don't think they had their A-plus game. I think you'd average it out to maybe they had a B-plus game, but they still found ways to win and in controlled fashion. And that to me is really, really encouraging to see.
Yeah, I totally agree. In Monday night's game, when Backlund scores shorthanded to tie it at 3 in the past, that would have been an oh no. But then Matthew scores in the power play, and Tavares scores in quick fashion.
And I like on that power play, just to interrupt, how they got things back in order, because that was a big key for me to take away from that game. We might have been going to be talking about it later, but man, the power play had been rough because I think they were getting a little bit too fancy. It almost seemed like after they gave up that shorthanded goal and then Sheldon Keefe called that timeout, to me, that I said to myself at the time, I bet they score on the remainder of this power play here, because that was almost like rock bottom. And it was almost like a message to say, okay, let's get away from the cross-ice passes and the dancing around. Let's just get the puck on net, bang away, and see what happens. And those are the types of goals you need to get in order to get out of funks.
Yeah, first of all, sorry to hear that you're talking to yourself now. hopefully that goes away. The other point I want to bring up is, I don't want to take away from the record that Jack Campbell tied last night with his 9th straight win. But I thought he was swimming on a couple of occasions where he seemed to lose his footing and was maybe overplaying. And I took note of that, not because it cost him the game, but, you know, I don't know what to buy into here with him because of the precariousness of his injury that, you know, maybe, you know, he played when Friday and then played on Monday. And there was a noticeable difference in him, I thought.
Yeah, he, I don't think he had his best game on Monday. But I thought he was more than serviceable. If that's the type of goaltending you're going to get in the playoffs, I think you're going to be okay by and large, as long as you're playing in front of them the way they did. But I'm with you on the broader picture, though, when it comes to Jack Campbell. Like, in any other year, a goalie goes 9-0 for Toronto. They're building statues out front of the Scotiabank Arena. They're putting him on Legends Row. He's got billboards. Kids are saying not I am Freddie Anderson, but I am Jack Campbell. You know what I'm saying with that ad, man. Did that come out at a tough time for the good folks at that video game company with Freddie Anderson? But that's not our concern. Point is, I'm still not convinced that Jack Campbell is going to be a guy that you can rely upon for, say, 24 games over the span of 48 or 50 days from May to July. Just because these 9 wins have come over the span of like 2.5 months, not 3 weeks. And to me, there is a bit of a concern. The fact that he didn't even back up in the Sunday game, I get they're really taking an approach with an abundance of caution on him. But, you know, why is that? Is that because they're so concerned that Freddie's not going to be able to get back and that if Campbell should be out long-term, then they're in a real tight spot? Or is it that he really is hanging by that much of a thread that Campbell's status is also in question? Like, there hasn't been a lot of clarity in terms of what exactly is going on from a health standpoint with the goalies. And to me, if I'm Kyle Dubas, he's obviously got more information on that than you and I do. But if there is any element of concern that Campbell is, you know, a play away from a long-term injury and that Freddie Anderson's return remains not imminent, I think that's got to be priority number one for Kyle before next Monday, to go out and get a goalie, because this team is too good to take that risk to go into the playoffs with that lack of reliability in net. We've seen what happens, and the blueprint is Colorado last year, and their third option was the guy who's the third option for this Toronto team right now. It's no disrespect to Michael Hutchison, but if he's your guy in the third round or into a cup final, you're probably not winning many games.
Yeah, totally agree with that. So nobody's really secure about the goaltending for the Leafs. And the reason that we bring that up is, and I think this might be the first time in recent memory that when we watch the Leafs play now, a good month before the playoffs start, we look at them, not what they're achieving now, but how it projects mm-hmm. into the playoffs. So, you know, nobody's really concerned about what the Leafs are going to do here. They're in control of their own plight, and there are no real worries that way. So anytime we do any analysis here, it's, How does this go forward into a playoff series and against specific teams? They're certainly getting a good look at everybody in their own division. So the goaltending thing is precarious. I don't know who you could acquire that wouldn't get in the way of your other acquisitions, because as I looked at the cap room this morning, they have $185K for space, and that's like 13th on the list. There are 10 teams with $0. For yeah. space. So I don't know how this works. There's always a creative way to do it, but it's going to be, I guess, a limitation going forward, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, they can barely fit you or I under the cap right now, Tatman.
And we work cheap.
And we work cheap. So it is a tightrope that Kyle's going to have to walk. But, I mean, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but we seem to get caught up in, oh, they need another, you know, maybe second line left winger. They need some depth on D. And I don't disagree with that. But to go back to the point that I made just a moment ago, because of the space that you find yourself with under the cap, if that only puts you in a position where you're able to consummate one transaction, to me, you have to be sure between the pipes. And if that is an area where you are unsure, then so be it. That's the only transaction you make to shore up between the pipes. Because if you end up running into a problem in goal, to me, if you go out and get an improvement on left wing, or you go out and you add some depth on D, doesn't much matter if you end up having to go to the well in goal and what you see in the well is not something that you're happy with. Do you agree with me on that? Or
absolutely, I do. Although this is a tricky situation, because, you know, to get another goalie in there, you'd have to pair out some salary. And I think people would go to, well, move Hutch out. But Hutch is there for a number of reasons. One of them would be the expansion draft. So you have to be careful how you do all this stuff. You know, that's a real interesting fine-tuned juggling act, but I would agree with you. You cannot go into a playoff run, and the people that make these decisions know the full extent of Campbell and Anderson in terms of what they're playing with or trying to work through. But if you've got a question mark there, that would undermine the whole thing.
Well, if it's okay. So you go out, let's say you acquire Nick Foligno. Oh, that makes your second line look a little bit nicer. Oh, you go out and you get David Savard. He strengthens your back end a little bit. And then come the middle of the second round, you got to turn to Michael Hutchison. Well, curtains, right? Like you're not winning a cup. So it's as simple as that to me. And again, no disrespect to Hutchison. He's been good, when they've had to call upon him in the regular season, but man, I mean, I'm sorry. I can't project, a future scenario where you win a Stanley Cup if he's the guy that you got to turn to night in and night out. I just can't. Maybe he proves me wrong, but that's a hell of a risk to take with a team that otherwise I think is as good of a Stanley Cup contender as there is, because, you know, there's a lot to like with what you're seeing with this team. Tavares and Nylander are starting to come to life a little bit on the second line. I thought, quite honestly, the two of them had their two best games in quite some time against Calgary over the weekend here, especially at even strength, which is something you and I have been talking about on this show for a little while now. It was good to see them come to life. If you can get something out of them consistently, and Matthews and Marner just continue to hum along and do their thing, and then you chip in down the lineup with guys like Spezza, who, man, you want to talk about value contracts. Find me, maybe outside of Carter Verhaeghe, a better one in the NHL. Spezza's been unbelievable. I mean, this team is really, really good.
Yeah, healthy, it's good. So I think anything they're doing at the trade deadline is to fortify in case of injury. Going back to that goalie situation, as you were describing that, I got a quick flashback to the two cups in a row Detroit won in the late 90s. So they're going for cup number three. And at the trade deadline, they acquire Chelios, Wendell Clark, Ulf Samuelsson, and Bill Ranford. Mm-hmm. Detroit sweeps the Ducks in the first round, 4-0. Chris Osgood gets injured against Colorado in the second round. Ranford has to play, and he's at the end of his career, obviously. Wins the first two games in Colorado. The second game was a shutout. Go back to Detroit for game three, and it was clear that he didn't have his confidence. Start letting in soft goals. The Wings were eliminated the next four games. They put Osgood back in hurt. I mean, this is what we're talking about. Nothing to do with the individual. One soft goal in a playoff series can turn it right around.
It's 100% true. And it's a great example that you bring up. And just like I said, to me, to look to more recent times, Colorado is the very blueprint from less than a calendar year ago. That team was capable of winning a Stanley Cup. But then they ran into a big problem in net. Philip Grubauer got hurt. Pavel Francouz was not reliable. And then he got hurt. And then Hutchison, you know, he stood on his head for, I think it was a game there. But eventually that well ran dry and Colorado was out of the playoffs prematurely. If they had had, Yaroslav Halak is a tough example because he's been one of the better backups for a number of years. So that might be overestimating the type of guy that you need to get. But you need a National League caliber goalie who can go into the net and just give you goaltending that can be relied upon. You don't need Vezina Trophy caliber goaltending, but you need better than AHL caliber goaltending. You know what I mean? Like AHL caliber goaltending is Michael Hutchison, where, okay, sometimes he looks really good, but then there's other games where, you know, one between the wickets and one between his glove and his body and in the first 9 minutes, and it's like, oh man, game's over with. Or, you know, Garrett Sparks, where it's swim all over the ice and sometimes it hits him and other times. Those type of goalies, that's AHL caliber goaltending. You need NHL caliber goaltending. And after Campbell and Freddie Anderson right now, I'm not sure if the Leafs have that. And, you know, you look at Carolina right now, Donnie Waddell has been suggesting that they might be using one of their netminders as a trading chip to strengthen their team in advance of the deadline, because they've got three NHL caliber goalies in Mrazek, who returned and looked quite good the other night in a shutout win, and Alex Nedeljkovic, who's been outstanding in his rookie year. And oh, who does that leave? Jimmy Reimer. Could he be an option for this team?
Optimus Rhymes.
I mean, because he'd be an improvement, right, on what they have right now. He's a National League caliber goalie.
Well, here's the funny thing is the Leafs could well acquire Reimer or Bernier if they wanted to at the trade deadline. But whoever it is has to be. I mean, it's one of those situations where, you know, if you're convinced that you have to do this, then you bring the guy in and you almost hope you don't need him because you'd want your other two to be healthy. But so the guy has to be a makeup that if he doesn't play, he's not going to get upset. He has to understand his role.
Right.
And that would be a guy like Reimer and or Bernier.
Yeah, Bernier is a great example, too. He's another guy that would fill that role perfectly. He's better than Hutchison. You've theoretically got a couple of guys ahead of him that you're happy with, but if you have to turn to him, you feel like you've got a National League caliber goalie in the net where, that's from a psychological standpoint, I think that goes a long way for a group as well. Just to know that you've got a guy that's got some past history behind him where he's shown that he can play at this level for a relatively consistent period of time.
It's an interesting scenario. We'll see what happens in a week's time. Dave, thanks very much.
Last minute of play in this podcast.
Thank you very much, Mike Ross. And time now for the Yes Guy, No Guy Awards to end off episode 25 of Leafs Guy. Auston Matthews on a tear lately. Oh, Yes Guy. Jake Campbell, unbeatable, 9-0. Oh, Yes Guy. The Leafs overall, 7-0-1 in their last eight. Another Oh, Yes Guy. New category here, Leafs power play. Oh, no guy. What is that? Let's hope that the power play goal from Matthews in Monday night is the turning point for the Leafs power play, because up until now, a complete oh, no guy. Hope you enjoyed episode 25. Hope you come back for episode 26 on Friday.